So I'm going to talk about relationships. I'm going to talk about our personal relationships, our family relationships, our church relationships, any relationship. And I want to look at the things that undergird our relationships, and then I want to talk about the internal conversations, the conversations we have inside our heads, and then I'm going to talk about hospitality a little bit. So, do you know what I hear such a lot when I speak to people? They tell me they want to be happy. I've had so many marriage encounters where people say, you know what, I need out of this, I'm just not happy. It's just not working for me anymore. Or I'm leaving the church because I'm not happy. And people come with that. And the thing is, you know, happiness is not a value. Happiness is a result. And it's a result, it's a fruit of a lot of hard work. And relationships are extremely hard work. It's normal to have all sorts of stresses and struggles in your relationships. But the great thing is that it's quite normal and it's very workable. And let me just say, if happiness is your big value, then I suggest you don't look for a wife or something, get a dog. That, because that's kind of the level of those sort of values. Okay, so James, in James chapter 1 and verse 2 to 5, it says, "My brothers and sisters, when you have many kinds of troubles, you should be full of joy, because you know that these troubles test your faith, and this will give you patience. Let your patience show itself perfectly in what you do. Then you will be perfect and complete, and will have everything you need. But if any of you needs wisdom, you should ask God for it." See, our relationships are full of conflict, of fear, of disillusionment, of disappointment, of hurt feelings. And so what are the things that undergird it? And the first value is that we need to love God. You see, Mark says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength." And then when we're loving God, we always adjust to what He requires of us. We adjust and we submit ourselves to Him. And the great thing is then that we no longer in charge. It takes us out of being in charge. And then our relationships win. If we're loving God and we're putting Him first, God empowers us to change. And so we've got to love God with all our heart, all our mind, and all our strength. And when you love Him and you lose yourself in that, the amazing thing is you gain your life. So the second thing is, this is like free marriage counseling here. You've got to love your spouse, love your neighbor, love that other person. That's the second thing. So we love God, and then we love our neighbor or the other person. And we've got such a distorted view of love. We see it as a romantic thing, or we see it as, you know the stuff, attraction, security, all that kind of thing. But you know what love is? Love seeks the welfare of the other person. That's what love is. It's got nothing to do with gratifying you. It's got to do with looking after that other person. So you've got to ask yourself, here are a couple of tips then. Ask yourself, what are the effects of my behavior? Would I like to be at the receiving end of this behavior? You see, it's not about being self-centered and pleasing ourselves. So we've got to be thinking, how could I make this better for the other person? Because empathy, we need empathy. And empathy is feeling that person's needs as your own And then you make an effort. You sacrifice sometimes to help with that, to meet that need. It's not only empathy, it's also a commitment. This is all about loving. You know, you seek the well for the other, and then you've also got to be committed to it. In Hebrews 13, verse 5, the Lord says, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. See, God has a covenant with us, and we need to have a commitment as well. Because the commitment part provides the structure, it provides the time we need, and it provides the security for the change to take place. And we're never going to get the necessary growth if we're not going to stick in there. The marathon runner in the middle of the race can't see the end. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to keep going at it. Let me read this to you from Corinthians. You all know it, but think of it in what I'm saying. Corinthians 13, 4 to 8. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous. It does not brag, and it's not proud. Love is not rude. It's not selfish, and it does not get upset with others. Love does not count up wrongs that have been done. Love is not happy with evil, but is happy with truth. Love patiently accepts all things. It always trusts, always hopes, always remains strong. Love never ends. Do you know what? That is powerful protection against evil. So, first two big tips. You've got to love God, and then you've got to love your neighbor, your spouse, the other person. And then the third thing you need is honesty. It's often the act of lying that is far worse than the actual lie itself. And if you have honesty without commitment, you can totally wreck a relationship. And if you have honesty without forgiveness, it does the same thing. It can wreck things. And perhaps not only just the lies you've got to be thinking about here, but what stops you and me from being honest? And here's a few possibilities. Perhaps it's your feelings, or disappointments you've had, or your desires, your likes, your dislikes, your hurts, anger, pain, sin, failure, vulnerability, goes on and on. All these things we have. And so the suggestion I have, so okay, we've got all those things, so what are we going to do? You know what? We're going to take responsibility for our dishonesty. Face ourselves. Take responsibility. Take ownership of it. Acknowledge it. And become a person of truth. And of course, we've got to be honest with God. And then the fourth thing is faithfulness. Faithful people can be depended on. They can be believed in. They can be trusted. You can rest when you're around faithful people. Here's the words that describe it. It's trust, confidence, truth, certainty. And that's who we want to be. Those are the things that should be determining how we have relationship with other people. As a friend, as a husband, or a wife, or a colleague at work, you have an enormous power to heal people and to support them, you know, and to sustain them. So then it's loving God, it's loving your neighbor, it's being honest. Honesty, faithfulness, and then you need compassion and forgiveness. You know what? You can expect failure from the best people in your life. Ecclesiastes 7:20 says, there's not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins. So what are we going to do? Except you, yes. No. 1 Peter 4:8 says, most importantly, love each other deeply, because love will cause many sins to be forgiven. You know, in the old translation, love covers a multitude of sins. Right? So forgiveness is in the picture. And there's no failure that is larger than grace. No hurt exists that love can't heal. But we need to be compassionate. Colossians 3:12-15 says, God has chosen you and made you his holy people. He loves you. So always do these things. Show mercy to others. Be kind, humble, gentle, and patient. Get along with each other and forgive each other. If someone does wrong to you, forgive that person because the Lord forgave you. Do all these things, but most important, love each other. Love is what holds you all together in perfect unity. Let the peace that Christ gives control your thinking, because you were called together in one body to have peace. And always be thankful. See, when we're offended, we harden our hearts. And all this stuff just goes out the window. And let's face it, in our relationships, we often and easily offend it. And then the final thing that defines and undergirds our relationships is holiness. And I know it doesn't sound like fun, because, you know, you have this picture of these religious pictures. Well, that doesn't sound like fun to me anyway. Do you know what a holy person is? A holy person is blameless. It looks like this. It's individuals who confess and own their problems. Confess your sins and own your problems. It's individuals who drive towards growth and development. It's individuals who give up things that get in the way of love. It's individuals who surrender everything that gets in the way of truth. And it's a purity of heart where we don't let toxic stuff come and settle. Pursuing holiness means you become the kind of people who produce love and life. And you become whole, and you become trustworthy, and you become honest, and you become faithful, and you become loving. Because you know what? We are our relationships. We always say the church is the people. We are our relationships. And these are the kind of things our relationships need to be based on. These are the things we need to be striving for. God first. We love him with everything we've got. And then we love our neighbor, our spouse, whoever it is, in a concrete way. And then we're honest, and we're faithful, and we're compassionate, and we forgive easily. And then we pursue holiness. So those are the values, if you like, that should be undergirding our relationships. Because we are our relationships. So, I want to talk about the conversations we have in our head. It sounds a bit daft, but do you know, psychologists refer to this as your grandstand. And we all have people in our grandstand that we put there over the years, and then we play out our life in the field in front of our grandstand. And in your grandstand, you've got your headmaster who caned you every Monday morning if you were Chris. or your teacher or your aunt who said you never going to amount to anything. Or you, we all have those people, or just someone we want to impress, or whatever. And those are the people sitting in our grandstand, and they're watching us. So actually, you've got those little voices in your head when you have conversations. Do you know, at our church in Tigerberg, we had a lady who every single Sunday, she would talk about what I was wearing. She'd come and say, "Gail, skirt's a bit short. The minister's wife." Or she would touch me and say, "But expensive." I had big conversations in my head that I cannot reveal because we're not good. And then we had the poor in Stellenbosch when we were there. And you get, you know, you have this at you all the time that you go and put your groceries in the car and there's someone begging. You go outside your house and they're digging in your bin. You, in church, we would go up to communion with our handbag under our arm. That just always felt wrong to me because they'd swipe your purse or your mobile, as you call it. So, you know, that's, and you just get kind of, you don't hear them anymore. You don't see them in the, anymore. You don't listen to them. Chris once paid for one guy's whole mother's funeral. There was never a mother. Nobody died, but Chris. he did that.
Don't try it. I'm wiser.
So what I'm trying to say is we need to be listening to that internal voice. And sometimes we just don't hear it or we respond in the wrong way. And if you look, and of course when there's conflict, it gets way worse. And so we need to be listening to what's the conversation you're having in your head, in the background. And you'll find that it's got the same basic structure that underlines it. And most of the time it goes a bit like this. Now, who's right here? Think of, and of course I'm always right. And you're always right because you believe what's going on in your head, don't you? So we think we're right. That's the first thing. And then the second thing we're always thinking is, whose fault is this? You see, we love blaming. So we can't have a conversation without a little, this little voice in your head that's blaming. And then, even when somebody's kind, this little voice is saying, okay, what's the motivation here? What do they want? You know, depending on where you're coming from or what's happening. We've got this internal voice. And the more frustrated, the more we blame, and the more we want to fix, and we talk at people, not to them, and we want to lecture them, and we want to do stuff to them. Here's a suggestion. What if you change those little questions in your head, that little voice, and you train that little voice in your head to be saying things like, now, what do I think each of us think about this? You know, what's the other person thinking about this? In other words, we listen. And why do they see it differently to me? Ask yourself that question. And what if we each contributed to the problem? Because we do. We all bring something into the mix. What's my contribution into this problem? Because, you know, sometimes people make a decision and they do something and then the outcome is disastrous. If you actually talk about it and you think it through, their intention was reasonable. The outcome was bad or the impact of it was bad. It didn't work. But there's a difference between the intention and the impact. And we need to change those conversations in our heads, those internal conversations, because I think then we might speak nicely to each other. And those are big things, because we are our relationships. So, hospitality. Now, I'm not talking about having someone around for a meal here. I'm just using the term in in a different way. So, there was a study at a university in the States. I can't remember which one, where they had a group of students and they said to them, look, you're going to go and give a talk, you've got 10 minutes and you need to get to the other side of the campus. And then they left them 10 minutes by the time they let them go, and they would get to where they're having the talk. And along the route, they set up a guy who was really in distress and, you know, in a bad way. An incident, as the English call it. So, these students, off they went. How many people do you think stopped to help the distressed? That was this not.
I would have been one of them.
Who didn't stop? How many people do you think? Percentage? I'll tell you. 10% stopped. So they did it again with a different group of students, and they gave them 20 minutes to get across. And they had the same incident in the middle of the whole thing. And the second time around, 50% stopped. Here's the interesting thing. They were theological students. And guess what talk they had to do? This is true, by the way. They had to speak about the Good Samaritan. And what's my point? My point is, we've got to be not only good at what we do, but we've got to be good at who we are. We've got to be good at who we are. John Maxwell says, and he's a leadership guru for those of you who don't know, that to succeed, we must see more than others, and we must see it before others. So we've got to be on the cutting edge, you know. And it's true in the church. It's like we in the church have to compete for every other entertainment, if I can call it that, that's outside on a Sunday morning. People are shopping and they're playing football and they're doing their thing. We're competing with all of that. And then in the church itself, we've become so culturally sensitive to everything. And you know, there's this kind of competitiveness that's, you know, people choose, or they're concerned about silly things like the coffee, you know. Do you have nice coffee? Yeah. What do we put on in those things? Those are not issues, in my opinion, anyway. And so this thing I want to read to you made a huge impact on me years ago when I read it. Because we love this thing of being out there, ahead of the game. And the pressure is on for us all the time to be doing that. And when you're a little group like us, it's quite difficult to be there. And I read this. And this is the gospel. It's entitled Inherent Unmarketability. How do you make attractive that which is not? How do you sell emptiness and vulnerability and non-success? How do you talk descent when everything is about ascent? How can you possibly market letting go in a capitalist culture? How do you present Jesus to a Promethean mind? That's like a rebellious mind, if you don't know. And how do you talk about dying to a church trying to appear perfect? It's just not going to work. And that's what we essentially are selling. But you know, I believe that we've got to be people who are good at who we are. And there's our cutting edge, in my opinion. So, what have we got to have? We've got to have the emotional skills that will dramatically make our members and our visitors feel much better. We want to be kind-hearted and we want to be optimistic. We want to be interested in people and curious. We want to have empathy. We want to be self-aware and discerning. We need to have integrity and be genuine. And it's everywhere, you know. It's at home, it's at work, it's here. When people move in next door to you, what do they experience? What do they find? Because we need the mark of a Christian on us. You know. And what does that look like? I think it looks like this kind of stuff. That's our distinctive thing. Yeah, we want to become the people we're supposed to be. We want to be people who are good at who they are and what they do. We want excellence, but good at who we are. Amen.